related issues and distributed free of charge to community radio stations around the world. For more information, email wings@wings.org. Supporters in 2021 include community radio stations WERU and KMUD, Carolyn Byerly, the Women's Institute for Freedom of the Press, the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, U.S. Chapter, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning, and whose recent series of events can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering
You are
Service.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community, focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Occasionally, people tell me I'm all wet. Well, today we're going to immerse ourselves in the issue of water in our county. We all know how important water is to our lives, to our very survival. Despite a tendency to just expect and rely on us having all our water needs satisfied here in the Pacific Northwest, that reliance appears to be in some jeopardy. Climate change and other issues challenge our water comfort level. Today, we want to understand how we get our water in Washington County, how we use and pay for it, and what to expect in the short and long-term future. And we'll learn about talking water. More on that from our guests a little later. Our guests today are from the Tualatin Valley Water District. We have Tom Hickman, who serves as Chief Executive Officer. He has been with Tualatin Valley Water District since August 1st, 2019, and brings a municipal water background with him. Prior to that, he was with the City of Bend for some 14 years. Also with us today is Joel Carey. Joel is currently serving as the General Manager of the Willamette River Water Coalition. Joel served as the Chair of the Oregon Water Utility Council in 2020 through 2021. Thank you both for joining us today. Very pleased to have such knowledgeable gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Getting right to questions, both of you. Gentlemen, where do we in Washington County get our water from now, and is that about to change?
Do you want to take that one, or?
I'll start, and then, so currently we get our water from the Portland Water Bureau, and the Bull Run system is one of our major sources. The other major source we get is from what we call the Joint Water Commission, which is made up of a number of partners in Washington County. And that water comes from both Hag Lake and from the Barney Reservoir. So those are our two primary sources of water today. We do have some wells where they're called ASR, or Aquifer Storage and Recovery, where we can take water, put it into the aquifer during high flows, pull it out during high demand periods and when flows are low. So that's another source that we have. And
that's
then
sort of your emergency supply stash, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we are currently working on another source of water. And this is referred to as the Willamette water project, or this is a whole new source, the Willamette River, that we're looking at providing to the greater Washington County region and with our partners, both Beaverton and Hillsborough. And that will provide a whole new source of water that we don't have today. And really, it's focused on resiliency, so seismic resiliency. And allows us then to shift our resource really where it's available, right? It allows us to make choices in the future that we don't necessarily have today, or without it, would we have in the future?
So your system is built in options, so you get to pick what's most useful in the given context.
Most useful, and it's also based on what's available, right? So we don't get all of the, you know, we can't have everything we want from Bull Run or from Barney and Hag Lake. We share that resource. So as we look at sharing this resource with the other partners, you know, that availability is what determines that. And I don't know, Joel, if you wanted to clarify anything I said there or add to that.
Well, thanks, Tom. No, I would add one of those things I think it's kind of cool to talk about just for a brief second is while it may be a small portion of the portfolio that Tom just mentioned, it's the aquifer storage and recovery component. You know, think about the way this operates. We actually take supplemental water in the wintertime when typically things are more plentiful, and we actually inject it underground. When we do that, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, there's a lot more precipitation typically this time of year. It's available. So we can take that excess through all of our supplies and actually store it in the underground aquifer. And we can store up to, well, over 300 million gallons at times if we need to in that aquifer. And then as Tom pointed out, during the summertime demand period, we can actually go ahead and use that supply to help offset. So it's kind of it's one of the unique strategies. And like I said, it may not be a huge portion of our supply, but it does play a really critical role and kind of highlight some of that adaptability and flexibility and kind of the approach we take to water supply.
Excellent. And as we talk about accessibility, let's move into another aspect of supplying water to the community. How do you folks ensure safety and water quality for us consumers?
Oh, that's a good one. That's kind of in the portfolio of what I do here at the district at times too. So aside from being the general manager, I'm also the water resource division manager or general manager for the Willamette River Water Coalition. I oversee our water resource division too, which includes our water quality programs. That's where we do a lot of the testing analysis to make sure the water supply is safe. You know, honestly, that's definitely one of those, we're probably gonna say this word often today. It's definitely kind of a partnership effort from the source to the tap. I just wanna point that out and be super clear. We monitor that supply, and by we meaning us or our partners, all the way from the points that Tom mentioned, whether that's Barney Lake, Hag Lake, upper portion of Tualatin, the portion we get from Portland through Bull Run, that gets monitored all the way from source to tap. We do an extensive amount of testing throughout our system on that. Our staff are out there collecting hundreds of samples every week to verify safety of the water, you know, to make sure it's within our public health requirements. All that analysis that we do, a lot of that gets posted online. We try and make sure we report it to our customers, but it's an ongoing daily process, and it's not just our group, to be super clear. You know, that is sort of the district wide with our operations staff. Tom sees this information at times. Our communications folks see it. You know, we try and make sure that data, that information gets shared, you know, across the agency and with our public health regulators too. So there's a lot to unpack there if you really want to go into the details of the water quality behind it. So
no, I think you've been really cool, but as you say, the process is ongoing, of course, with your partners. I'm just curious, do your partners use the same testing methodology that you guys do?
Yeah, there's a lot of industry accepted standards that we utilize. Whether that's, you know, this gets into like the weeds here, but whether it's a laboratory method that gets used for analysis or the instrumentation that we use as an industry, a lot of that stuff is shared across the industry, frankly, to make sure that, I think kind of what you're getting at is, you know, the data, the information is apples to apples, if you will. So,
exactly. If your partner tests a given, one of your partners tests a given sample, I'd like to know that the testing procedure is the same as if another one of your partners tests it. Or if there's different, then they can combine and work together. However that works, I was just curious.
Yeah, that's exactly how, yeah, that way we all know that we're looking at the same information, we can compare it. Yep.
And we can feel safe, sir, with all due respect. Yeah, my understanding is that you guys have announced an upcoming increase in water rates. I'm going to ask the question that I think most everybody is asking who, like, is in the district. They're going to say, why? And that's my question. Why are water rates increasing, gentlemen?
So, first off, raising rates is not something anyone looks forward to doing. I can tell you, I've been in the business a long time, and it's always tough. And one of the things that I always point out is, you know, every year for all aspects of our life, right, the cost of those services go up. So in other words, we have inflationary factors, right, that drive things. Those things happen, and what I'm getting at is there's always should be some sort of base increase if we're actually trying to keep away from big spiky events. You do that by making these regular increases to deal with just inflationary costs. So that 1 to 3% that you would see in terms of cost of living, you should expect to see that in most of your rates and services, because it impacts all of us. Okay. Now we're looking at something above that. And what's really driving that for us is the Willamette Water Supply Project. This is a project that actually began in the 70s. Most people don't realize how long ago this project was thought of and how it started. And we are now at that point where we're actually building it, where all the costs are. So even though the district took some very strong proactive measures starting, I think, about 10 years ago, where they did some rather large increases, and even prior to that, to build some cash reserves, it wasn't enough to actually pay for what the cost of the project is. So we've taken proactive measures. We've also done some creative financing. But all of this increases our rates. So that by far is our biggest driver for Tualatin Valley Water District. You know, our portion of that project is in the $600 million range. That's a significant amount of money that we have to be in a position to pay back. The other thing real quickly on this is COVID hit everybody by surprise, right? None of us saw that coming. That impacted our revenue stream. Between that and some very strange weather events, the last two summers, not this summer, but the prior two summers, we had a lot of moisture. So our water revenue from sales was way, way down. So we have these fixed costs that are associated with this project that we cannot change. And we have to pay for those. And in order to do that, we do that through recovery of rates. We have no other source of revenue to help us pay for this.
Understood. I wonder if there isn't an additional factor. We hear an awful lot, especially with a federal bill being discussed and debated about infrastructure. I'm wondering about TVWD's infrastructure. Pipes don't last forever, and I'm concerned about whether or not this is time to, well, not rebuild exactly, but revamp.
So that's a great question. Many of us in the industry, we've been lobbying for our whole careers. My first trip back to Washington, D.C. to talk about investment in infrastructure replacement across the country was back in 2005. And I went back every year for a number of years trying to convince our elected officials that these are critical investments that we need to make. They remain, frankly, for us and for everyone else. We do have aging infrastructure here in terms of our pipes. Frankly, a lot of the infrastructure that was put in the post-World War II boom is at its end of life. So they used what they thought was the best practices and best materials at the time. Sure. Many of those have not lasted as long as what I'm sure they had hoped, or what we had hoped. So we are in a situation where we also have a lot of investments to make to replace that aging pipe.
So it is indeed another factor in increasing prices.
It absolutely is. And it's something that we will be facing for decades to come, of this incremental annual replacement of that infrastructure.
Given that and the other factors you mentioned, what have you guys done in order to try and keep rates low?
So my tenure here has been pretty short. So I came on board just before the pandemic hit. But in that time, we actually reduced our personnel services. We are a lean organization. So we don't have a lot of extra staff capacity. When we have one person missing in some work groups, it becomes critical really, really fast for us. So we are that type. But we did make some cuts to our personnel services, about 2.8% or 3%, somewhere in there. While that doesn't sound like much, it's a pain point. It hurt for us. We all feel it. We all put in more hours and effort to keep things running and make sure we meet the essential services. The other thing that we did is we made some other very uncomfortable decisions. And that was, we made decisions to postpone some critical investments. That includes some of the investments you just mentioned, where we have some aging infrastructure that we said we should be doing this now, but because of the financial situation that's going on right now, we're gonna take a little bit of a gamble and push this off into the future. So we've pushed some of these out by a few years to help soften the blow, because that's where the biggest dollars are. The biggest place where we did that was actually on the Willamette Water Supply Project, mm-hmm. where us working with our partners, we all sat down and had some very difficult discussions. And we decided collectively that we postponed one of the major pipelines involved and one of the finished reservoir tanks that we said we could live without. And we put dates out into the future of when we will do those. We reran our financial models then to say, okay, we can afford to pay for it, you know, in those years. So that's what we've done. The other piece of this is we run a 20-year financial model. So we are looking 20 years out constantly. Every year we're looking, what's that? What else is out there on the horizon that we need to prepare to pay for today? And again, that is to smooth out those future rate increases so that we start collecting funds for something 20 years in advance. So we're not waiting to the point of failure, because if we wait till the point of failure, that's when we end up with really out of control spikiness in our rates.
It sounds like a real challenge in planning. I'm sure you've got some really skilled folks working on that, because 20 years, you know, I mean, I'm not sure what I'm doing tomorrow.
Yeah, it takes some takes to get out the crystal ball and use everybody's area of expertise to try and do the best forecasting you can. So,
and hope that nothing surprising, like, oh, you know, a pandemic comes along to mess things up.
Yeah, right.
Perhaps the most common public concern these days relates to our recent record temperatures, forest fires, droughts. How specifically, gentlemen, and I do mean specifically, will climate change impact our water supply? And folks, how quickly?
You know, that's actually one of the reasons why we are making this push to have this system in place in 2026, the Willamette system that Tom talks about and a lot of us are very engaged with. You know, the the ability for us to have multiple supplies is one of the key strategies to really deal with these changing cycles. You know, what we do know about climate change, certainly in the Pacific Northwest, is that it will exacerbate some of these conditions, like this year, longer periods of dry weather, potentially more episodic rain events that cause these storm events. It's that variability that we see, and this is one of the primary strategies that we're looking at to combat that, is having that diverse portfolio of options to pull from. You know, the Willamette is one of those because, frankly, you know, that is a very big basin. Yes, there's no denying that climate change will be impacting, but the fact of the matter is, having this supply source, having the availability that we do have at that supply point, combined with all of our other sources that we can share as regional partnerships, really does give us the ability to sort of turn the dials a little bit, kind of deal with that in the way that we can to make sure that we do have adequate supply for future generations. I mean, I'll let Tom out of this, but that supply system is looking at the next 50 to 100 years for the region, which is exactly why we're going to that source.
And that's excellent long-range planning. But before we turn to Tom, I was curious about something you said. You know, we're relying on the Willamette. Tell me, I've lived in this area for over 30 years, and I've heard lots of things about the water in the Willamette. Is it safe?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, all the extensive testing we've done, and I want to go back a point too, because Tom hit on a really interesting point there. When he talks about the Willamette supply system and our predecessors, our elected officials and staff at this agency, that far back to 1972, mm-hmm. that was actually when the district acquired water rights on the Willamette, knowing that this was a potential future source for us. So going back to that date, between that point and today, there has been an extensive amount of testing done on this source up and down the river. And certainly a really good point for our listeners and folks in Washington County to understand is that our intake at this facility, which is an expansion of an existing intake used by the city of Wilsonville, that intake is actually upstream of the I-5 bridge, just for a geographic landmark for folks to know. Generally speaking, we call that the Mid-Willamette. You know, because of the geographic location of that intake and the fact that this source has been tested extensively, and frankly, for the last almost 18 years with the city of Wilsonville using this as a source of water, we have a high degree of confidence in this source and know that it's going to be an excellent source for our for Washington County. That I'm sure we'll get into later, but that does not preclude the idea of us wanting to make sure that we're doing as much as possible to continue protecting it and enhancing that protection as well. So,
understood. But, thank you, Joel.
Tom? And if I could just add something to that point in terms of the planning side of this, we plan for water supply, as Joel just said, and certainly to address the climate change, we've diversified our portfolio a huge amount. But we've also are planning for future contaminants of concern. So our treatment plant that we are building is looking at what's out there in the future that we may need to deal with or treat for, so that we aren't caught, you know, oh wow, that we have a treatment plant that can't handle something. We have done our best to look far into the future to say, what are those future contaminants of concern that we may need to be treating for, can we make modifications to our plant to do so, or will the existing technology handle it? And I will say it's cutting edge treatment that can handle all of the stuff we're aware of today. And my guess is far into the future as well. So we're in a really good position.
It's pretty cool. It's what we call a multi-barrier approach in treatment. So it's, you know, a whole systems joined together at the treatment plant that can deal with those variety of things consecutively through each process. So
that's excellent. We've been talking about protecting the safety of water supply from contaminants, from ash, perhaps. You know, ash gets into water and suddenly that quality isn't the same. And darn, there's been a lot of ash lately. In addition to climate concern related issues, I'm concerned about the expected exponential growth in Washington County. I mean, sure, all the people that live here now, I want all of us, because I live here too, to have safe water. But 10 to 20 years from now, I'm told we could even be double the population. So the water we've got now and the mechanisms to working to keep it safe, thank you. Where will we get that much more water?
I see Tom. For those that don't know, we're actually, I can see Tom's face in this. So I don't, do you want to go first, Tom? And I'm happy to jump in after that.
Yeah. I was actually going to point to you, Joel. So,
well, you're both smiling, gentlemen.
these are actually, I mean, this is our wheelhouse. This is the kind of stuff that we'd like to talk about. So, it is absolutely true, you know, with population growth, that is why we're going to this expansion of this source. I know it might not, there's numbers we could talk about just for some reference points. You know, this plant that we're building will have the initial capacity for 60 million gallons a day. And then it's actually being designed for a future expansion with the way it's being set up so we could double that. So that's one side of it. Right. Obviously, we want to make sure we have the available supply there, which is something that we've looked at extensively. The second and third, there's multiple things that fall out of this, but you know, one of the other things that we talk about often, we've been doing for a long time, is just promoting efficient use of water. You know, promoting the fact that we want to make sure that, hey, you know, we know people want to be able to irrigate and do those types of things, but it's how you do it, how efficiently you're doing it, making sure that is sort of at the core foundation of how we promote water use in the region, right? You may have heard about this little thing that happened a couple months ago, which was the chlorine supply shortage sort of hit the news. And, you know, we had a lot of these conversations just trying to make sure people understood that, you know, I think we're going to be okay, but nonetheless, make sure that you're using your water efficiently. And that's one of the other ways that we make sure that we look out at the future. We do a lot of internal forecasting based on demands, based on per capita demand from our customers, and try and like model that out and project that out to make sure that we're watching to see, do we have enough supply? Where do those things cross? This all goes back to that planning thing that Tom talks about too, which is like, that's how we're looking at the future, trying to say, hey, 20, 30 years from now, you know, are we gonna be okay? You know, we wanna make sure people use water efficiently, but this might be the point where we have to talk about expanding a source or bringing something else online or looking at some other portfolio of options. You know, the district as a service provider, you know, it's our job to make sure that we're here to respond to those growth needs in the county. So to make sure that we're, you know, we joke, but we're kind of half serious when we say we're one of the economic backbones. You know, water provides those essential services, right? And our industries rely on them, and our fire protection, and our businesses, small businesses, large, all of it together.
That is excellent. I want to thank you, Tom, Joel, for spending this time with us. To our listeners, if you have comments or questions, feel free to get in touch with me at rob@insidewashco.org, and we will see you all next week.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark Berry.
KBOO Portland.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, it's the best of Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Mike Biggs. Today on the program, farm workers announced that a picket line is happening at the Simi Winery in Northern California. Also, Greg Pallas joins us with the latest on protecting your vote. All this and much more straight ahead on the best of Flashpoints. Stay tuned.